Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls and gamers of all ages, it's your politically incorrect podcast, The Blunt Force Gamers. It is I, your host, Game Goblin. Sitting alongside me is my usual co-host, Kazrakan.
Greetings from the North Dragon.
And my other usual co-host, Darth Blasphemous.
Hail to the dark side.
Alright guys, we're back and doing another weekly episode here now that we've set up our schedule. And we're creeping up really close to 1,000 downloads.
Holy God. I can't believe we tricked this many people into listening.
I know, right?
What a bunch of rubes.
And we're creeping up on it pretty quick. We're about 3/4 of the way there now.
Wow. Who'd have thunk? Ass backwards, a little podcast like us getting almost 3/4 of 1,000 downloads?
Yeah, we're sitting pretty close to 775 right now. We're just a few shy away from it.
You people are awesome.
I know, we love them.
Give us your names, like online handles or something, and we will shout you out. That way it's not always Jiggles.
Join our Discord, and I'll decline your invitation.
Okay there, Sargon.
All right, what's our topic for today there? You were talking about something earlier there, Blasphemous.
Yeah, so I've had a couple interesting ideas. One of the main ones, because everyone knows Game of Thrones last week. Everyone started going off in the media about how Arya Stark used a D&D move, sneak attack.
She was a letdown.
Eh.
You go, girl.
But either way, I really think that we need to have a perspective on what are the best D&D style movies, or movies, shows, anything for us to draw inspiration from for homebrew campaigns.
Conan the Barbarian. Done.
Elaborate. Come on.
Okay, I'm talking the original with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
The Governator.
Hermione, get down! You know, Dumbledore's the greatest wizard ever!
Before we get to it, shouldn't we roll an intro?
Oh. Whoops. Yeah. Let me get to that. Where's my button?
Feeling tired at the gaming table? Want to hear foul-mouthed jackasses poke fun at gaming companies when they screw up? Want an honest, street-level opinion from a team of gamers that call it like it is? Then Blunt Force Gamers may be the podcast for you.
Listener discretion advised.
All right, there's a stock intro. Happy?
moderately.
Okay.
It's not as good as last week's.
Nothing's it's the ever. Same one every week. Oh, no, wait. Last week was the throw together, I think, for your thing with...
We digress.
Yeah, we digress.
Well, you know, we had some scheduling issues because real life aggro, so...
Hey, and a real shout out to your homie with the Hooligans.
Oh, yeah. So
that was him doing the lyrics in our interview back in season 2.
Mm-hmm.
I told him I was going to recut that and add it to music.
Sweet.
Nice.
I need to hit him up. But yeah, so back to our topic. And Kazrakan, I'd really like to get your view on this, because you do a lot more of the anime than I do, and I'm not exactly sure what the Goblin does anime stuff, besides stuff that can't be talked about. But...
Yamate!
So, like, guys, what are we thinking about when we're wanting to pull... Like, we're watching a show, right? Just start throwing out titles in a minute. And just something pops out, and you're like, that would be great in a campaign. Or I would love to see a bad guy get that. Or a good guy get this. You know, what's your guys' thoughts?
So what you're asking is, where do you draw your inspiration from as a DM? That's the hit of this question. Using TV and media?
Basically, yeah, because... Everyone watches a bunch of the famous stuff. I mean, Marvel stuff, I'm sure there's people who do Marvel-style campaigns. I have better ways to waste my money. Aquaman rules.
But, dude, Captain Marvel is the rulest.
I know, strong woman, but that's beside
me. I'm actually glad that she did not come in and just blast Thanos at the end of it. That would have been so bad. But going on, like, D&D and other role-playing games... I'm kind of remiss to say this because it's a really out there movie, but Deathstalker 2.
Oh God, thanks for reminding me.
Yeah, like 90% of my games devolve into that. You know, I start off the campaign where I'm trying to, you know, do something serious, you know, a really good storyline, save the princess and all that, and you know, a few little things you don't expect, and suddenly the special effects, well, they just become strobe lights and a guy like touching somebody in the dark and get kind of lewd and weird, and the same music seems to play throughout the entire fucking game.
God, when did that come out?
That came out fuck in the 80s sometime. I mean, it's obscure as fuck. Now, for our listeners, if you have not seen Deathstalker 2, I highly recommend this movie just on the popcorn factor alone. All of the actors and actresses are adult entertainers.
Is this them trying to get legit, or was this them making one of those, we're doing an R-rated version and an X-rated version?
No, this was them trying to go legit. But somehow, you can tell that they were, like, filming the movie beginning to end, like, as per the script, instead of just filming certain scenes at certain locations, and then doing everything, putting it all together and post-edit. And you can tell throughout the movie that they were just, like, going from serious to having fun. And that's when the movie got good, is when they started having fun and stopped trying to be serious.
Oh my god. It really does happen out there in the real world.
It does.
Well, one, I'm guessing the theme that constantly ran through your campaigns was the Benny Hill theme.
The Benny Hill theme plays in a lot of campaigns, but yeah. In mine, more than once, somebody has popped it up on their media player in the background, you know, as battle's going out.
I mean, when you have to play music to emphasize a point, it's usually either awesome or terrible.
And there's, like, no in-between.
Well, most games start out, I mean, and of course, there's always the old throwback of Knights of the Round Table kind of movies. And most D&D games de-evolve into giant killer rabbits. And almost no D&D campaign is complete without somebody yelling, "Run away! Run away!"
Or nowadays, "Onward!"
Yeah.
It depends on your group and what direction they want to go. But most of the time it's run away. Like, there's a fan postulation that Monty Python and the Quest for the Holy Grail is exactly what happens in a D&D campaign. Like, they've compared it as a one-to-one analogous.
Yeah, like when they try to launch the Trojan horse over the wall.
I've got a strength score of 22. Watch me.
Fuck it, I'm just going to throw this thing over the wall. Screw it. Why try to sneak inside the front door? Crash.
Yes, let's avoid the main story plot town. It is a silly place.
It's only a model. See, there you go. Now we're quoting Monty Python after bringing the topic up. But that's what most games de-evolve into.
It is very real. And it seems like, you know, using this comparison, that in that movie, the DM just got fed up with everyone's antics and bullshit. And at the end, fine. You know what? Fine. The police show up and arrest everyone. Go the fuck home. Get out.
That sounds like one of those games where you guys are on a camping trip, and you start playing as soon as you guys get there, and by it's sunrise on day 3, and you're just like, all right, everybody, we've got to pack up. So, the marshals show up, and everyone dies. Bye. I got my own ride.
I got my own ride. It, like, got dwarves that act as wheels and carry it around. They walk me home in the wagon, uphill, all 3 ways.
I didn't realize you had a Ford.
Found on Road Dead.
First on race day.
Yeah. No, for D&D, though, most of my influences personally have come from movies like Conan and Deathstalker, more of the sword and sorcery old school games, where, what was it? There was one with a fucking demon and a dude who had, like, the super uber, like, 5-bladed sword that would, like, shoot blades out of it.
Like Kroll?
No, it wasn't Kroll.
God, I miss that movie.
That was an awesome movie, yeah. There was another one that was very D&D-ish. It was the hero comes back to save the castle kind of thing after the bad guy takes over. Standard tropes.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes back and he's got, like, this oversized 5-bladed sword. And, like, it's got pneumatic blades, like, on the side. He presses a button and it'll fire a blade out and just stab someone. That's D&D level bullshit right there. The fighter's like, I want a sword that will shoot a blade at a guy over there.
But I can't give up this sword. It's so awesome for my character build.
Right?
Oh, yeah, we're going back on that.
It's just a body.
It's just a body, yeah. And then you got players who are all like that.
Well, there's that.
There is that.
Like, what was it? Meme I saw. The invention of archery. You know what? I want to stab that guy over there.
It's like George Carlin said about the invention of the flamethrower. That guy over there, I want to set him on fire, but I'm too lazy to go up and just light him on fire. I just want to throw fire on him.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
It also sounds exactly like the line of thought most players take.
Also for influences, and going back on anime here for a second, there's also Attack on Titan. I have noticed going through forums and threads, a lot of people pick up on weird animes, and Attack on Titan is one of them, where they were like, there was an entire subreddit where people were like looking for creatures with a swallow hole or Jotun blood templates or anything that make the creatures bigger and more hungry to chase players around.
You know, I shouldn't even be surprised. I mean, you know, inspiration for the DM can come from anywhere. I mean, I've been rattling around some ideas in my head of having the Zerg invade just as unknown abominations and watching the players have to deal with that. I think that would be a fun, albeit perhaps a little bit cruel, my knowledge, way to play. But at the same time, you know, everything from the saga of Tanya the Evil is a good one. It's one of those, I think it's Isekai or something? Reincarnation after death variants. About a 9-year-old girl who takes on God.
Okay, well, it just actually reminded me, there's actually one source of material that I went to run one of my games, and you guys actually loved the ever-living shit out of it. And I really didn't even advertise what the fuck was going on. Let's see, if we go back, about 4 or 5 years now, when you guys were playing Vampire the Requiem with me, and I was running that game.
And Swamp Bath was there.
Yeah, you guys never picked up about the con.
He was a father, so he could be the con father.
No, he's not the con father. But no, all of the major characters in that game setting were pulled directly out of Mortal Kombat, just with name changes.
I like it.
All of them. The Prince of the City was basically Raiden, but Dark Raiden, so the later episodes, so he was like all evil and shit.
Oh, he's so edgy.
Of course, the Khan was Shao Kahn.
Mm, I loved serving under him. His daughter was great.
Yeah, you were dating his daughter. Guess who that would be?
I haven't played Mortal Kombat in a long time.
Exactly, but all of the characters, because Mortal Kombat has a huge wealth of knowledge to pull from. After the last almost 30 years of being in development and everything, there's a lot of sub-storylines and a lot of characters. So all I did was just pull the characters out, turn them into vampires, name-changed them, and threw them in the world. So all the politics were already there, already pre-written.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, so you guys were siding with the Prince of the City, which was basically Dark Raiden at the very onset. Blasphemous started siding with Shao Kahn later on, who was all militant and shit. There was also the evil guys running around who were kind of friends with the Khan, but not quite friends. You couldn't quite get a beat on that. But the leader of that was actually like a rescripted Quan Chi from the Netherrealm.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so like all of the politics were already there, already ingrained.
Nice.
So all I did was just translate it over to Vampire the Requiem. So that wasn't even from anything related to D&D. If anything, it's closer to Rifts or GURPS.
Mm. It was still a damn fun game.
It was still a damn fun game, and you guys had a great time until, you know, everything was just a body. Well, everything went to shit because of player greed. In the end.
Really? I thought it was more of the infighting about who the goddess got to stay with.
I recognize that was a thing, but I don't think it was as big a deal as you might be making it out.
Yeah,
to one of you.
No, the whole goddess thing actually wasn't that big of a deal on my end.
I don't know, I slept through half the game.
Well, that's... Yeah, that was such an exciting game. You slept through half of it.
Dude, I was working so many hours, and I was used to go, and then I'm sitting down for hours. Boy.
True.
It's a different thing. But that's neither here nor there. We were talking about inspiration.
Yeah, and that's where I pulled the inspiration for my vampire game, was right out of Mortal Kombat. All of the characters, all of the storylines, all of the factions, all the subplots, I just transferred them over and translated it.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even anything it wasn't anything that included swords and sorcery to begin with.
Well, it's not a very swords and sorcery game unless you're playing, Mage?
Mage. Don't get me started on that one.
I got the book right there.
Hi, this is my mage character, and this is my personal storyteller to tell me whether I can do this or not. Mage is a great game, actually, when you're going for inspiration, because we used to have a show here in Washington, which was Be Good by Billy Kwan.
Okay.
Yeah, and then Billy Kwong would run around Seattle, and if you were doing something bad, Billy would beat the crap out of you and tell you to be good. Be like Billy. And, like, one day somebody's walking across the park in one of the skits, and they toss aside, like, a wrapper into the park. And so Billy Kwong sees this from, like, halfway across the city. He's, like, over, it, like, in the Northgate area, and somebody's tossing trash down by Renton. Right? So this is like a 10-mile viewing spread that he gets, and he sees this happen, and he turns around Bruce Lee style and then runs forward and does this leap kick and flies across the aisle doing a leap kick 10 miles long. And like the person sees Billy Kwong coming, turns around, freaks out, and starts running away, and Billy Kwong chases them like all the way down to Tacoma and all the way back to Seattle before he finally connects, you know, foot to the back of the chest. You know? He's just, oh, the whole way, you know, you got the camera following the boot the whole way, you know, down the freeway and shit. This is Mage, in a nutshell. They actually have a rope that an Akashic Brotherhood can pull off, where they just rack up shitloads of paradox. But yes, if you see your target, you can run at them, take a leap kick, and leap after them. It doesn't matter if they get on a Concorde jet and go to Paris.
You will probably blow up.
No, you will connect with them.
Yeah.
The plane will land in Paris, and then, like, they're getting out of the plane, and boom, booked in the back of the head. That's Mage in a nutshell. You can pull just off-the-wall crazy zany shit.
So Pathfinder Mythic Edition is a small, very shallow shadow.
It is a pale shadow of Mage. I was playing a character in Mage one time, and the GM let it fly that I would channel the electrolytes in Gatorade to do electric attacks with my hands.
It's got what plants crave.
It's got what plants crave. Is it in you? This is Mage in a nutshell. It's just, it's loopy, wacky. The only limit to Mage is your imagination.
And water out of the toilet.
And water out of the toilet. All right, Mage, a bunch of guys got together, and this is how the whole joke started. They got a bunch of guys together, and there was a Sombra, who's the big, bad, evil guy of the campaign. And a mage with minimal spheres, so minimal powers, not even that big on the power scale.
Talking street magician?
Not a street magician, one of the mages out of the book. I can't remember what discipline he was at or what tradition he was part of. But he encountered the Lysandra, who was the big bad evil guy, and just snapped his fingers and turned him into a lawn chair. This is the crap you can pull a mage. If you have enough quintessence, you can do pretty much anything.
You know what, speaking of, when it comes to inspiration, this is a quick aside, how does it go with, like, mixing groups? Like, I was listening to a guy drone on and on and on about how he was in a game where they had a mage, a werewolf, a vampire, and a fae from the World of Darkness world. Like, how do you justify that in a game? Like, where would you have to draw your inspiration from for that?
Actually, mixing groups is one of the best ways to go at it. Unfortunately, the weak Achilles heel of the group is the vampire.
Mm.
Because nighttime comes, he's awake, sun rises, vampire drops.
That's why I like being Gangrel.
Well, sun rises, vampire drops. The Gangrel will fall down, go boom.
Yeah, I know. Into the earth where I sleep.
Where you sleep.
Because I can just go, hey. But and speaking of hey, what's up, buddy?
What's up? It's our latecomer, the Moniker, has just arrived at the podcast.
Yes, hello. I am here, finally. Got a nice ticket on the way here. So, it's been a fun day.
Yo, I didn't have to speed.
Oh, dude.
Are you speeding, or?
Something more pathetic than that.
You know what? I'm going to plug in your microphone right now. Okay, we're almost to it, so we're plugging in the Moniker's microphone. He just showed up after getting a speeding ticket.
Matt Gerd, such a bad boy.
Yeah.
You actually have to turn it on, too, before you talk. You know this, right?
No.
There's an on switch on the side of the microphone.
Don't worry, Snake is standing right behind him, shaking his head.
Ugh. Colonel.
Oh, there we go. There he is.
Oh, we're having a good time with this one. So, oh, yeah. Moniker, real quick, sorry to cut you off there, Goblin.
Oh, no problem. Bring him up to speed.
So this is what we're doing. We're talking about, when it comes to gaming, you know, running a game, designing one, or even just a character build we could even go off on. Where do you, what shows, TVs, hell, We talked about video games there for a minute. Are good sources to draw inspiration from. I know you're probably going to go off on the losers of the Great Battle 40K.
In terms of drawing inspiration, I mean, I'm sure you guys have already said it, and it's a pretty cop-out answer, but I think for any really newcomer, I mean, of course, you know, like Tolkien or, you know, Lewis, those are always really good places to start, or even...
Martin.
Yeah, Martin, or...
Zan.
Yeah, good one.
Yeah. Or, what's his name, Roberts, who did the Wheel of Time series.
Oh my god, I'm watching a extended lore series on that. I'm on episode 5 of, like, 30.
There's a lot of depth to that world.
Sure, like, I mean, classic literature, that's always a great place to start. In terms of me personally, I mean, for me, my biggest inspiration for characters, or even if I have an idea for, like, a world for a campaign, I draw most of my inspiration from video games. Like, as everyone really, already knows, like, I really love Dark Souls, because it's so subtle, and you can kind of pick and choose little elements that you like, because I do think it's such an original world.
And you died.
And you died. And then another one I like, too, is I like Berserk. That's also where I get a lot of inspiration from and stuff.
That was fucked up. Sorry, I watched the anime, man. That was fucked up. Like, right when Guts and Casca got together and finally, like, after all that buildup and tension over, like, hours and hours and hours and hours of fucking viewing, they finally get together and then, like, fucking Griffith rapes Casca.
Yeah.
Right in front of Guts, then kills her, and it's just like, dude, no, oh.
Dude, that was the worst beach episode of any anime ever.
Dude, that, I felt so dirty after watching that episode. I was just like, let Guts have one win, please.
Yeah. Yeah, it's,
Martyr of the Gods.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're going on drawing inspiration, though, that's actually a really good idea, because, that pulls out, like, let's say Kazarkan is playing a character, and he's got a background that gives him a love interest starting off, and his character's love interest gets just completely violated right in front of him and killed by the big, bad, evil guy. That's motivation to stay in the story.
I will kill you, motherfucker!
Exactly.
Grief ass! Yeah. So, that's where I'm drawing most of my inspiration, just to finish.
No, it's alright, The whole thing is, everyone gets a chance. And, you know, inspiration comes in many forms. Like, I've listened to podcasts about D&D campaigns, I follow D&D meme things, and, you know, frankly, some of them are pretty funny ideas. Like, a shield of protection that, when comes into harm, will put your body in the way to protect itself.
See, I usually just end up listening to the goblin go on about some crazy harebrained idea that he has to pull in, you know, a physicist and a mathematician to get right in any game system, or just one of his old stories. I mean, seriously, you go on about some shit that would break other DMs of ever wanting to play again.
This going into old stories and everything, there was a time, it was about 21, just before I turned 21. You know, someday you'll get hair on your nuts too, yeah. Yeah. Just wait, I'm laughing at you because I know it's coming, bitch. Anyway. When I was doing Vampire the Masquerade back then, I had the Player's Guide, I had the main core book, I had a bunch of other books, I had resources drawn from the other guys there, and I was in a manic episode. And so I just sat at the kitchen table for about 6-7 hours just creating one character.
Jesus.
Yeah. And when all was said and done, this character took half damage from everything. Mm-hmm. Everything, automatically. And then for his soak dice, he had 11 dice of soak on top of that. And the only thing he took aggravated damage from was fire and sunlight. So, I mean, this character was pretty brute. It was a starting level legit by the book character. And it was just so fucking broken. It was just obscene. And that's when I went from being a power gamer to rules molester.
Yeah, that's when power gamer and rules lawyer get together, have an unholy abomination. And then it gets, you know, taken in by...
Well, going on your story, though, you telling me that I would break other GMs or other games, yeah, that's pretty much it. I transcended Power Gamer and went just straight to Rules Molester. I'm out in like a white unmarked van outside the game store, you know, like, hey, Dungeons and Dragons, you want some candy?
You want some free minis?
You want some free minis, Dungeons and Dragons? Just, yeah, I got some dice in the trunk.
Good quality shit, too.
Yeah.
One roll of 20, it's one rolls you 20 half the time.
I take role-playing manuals back to my house and chain them up to the radiator in the basement.
Oh, man. Yeah, like some of the stuff you've told me about, like the poppets.
Oh, the poppets are fun. The punt gun is fun. The meat launcher is fun. The meteor cannon is fun.
Your ICBM, your Veritech.
Orbital missile platforms. And, you know, it's fun when I bring this shit up on forums and people are like, that doesn't exist in Pathfinder. And I'm like, with a little creativity, anything can exist.
That's kind of the point of it.
Yeah.
What was it? My roommate, Know-It-All, had come up with an idea. What happens if we build a drug to make people smarter? Well, what it did was it created a false stalk consciousness, and they would vie for control. So all of a sudden, we have this bizarre, fucked up, mutagenic biohive of people.
Fear the hive. Fear the swarm.
Yeah, and like, that was part of the way that game was gonna go. It just never took off. But like, I live with enough random people that finding the inspiration for things is literally everyday life. Cargo, new. Huh. That'd be a cool sound effect to have like a firebolt do. Just because it's zany. You know, everything and everything. Could be anything from, you know, magical magnetic trains, because you can do that as the GM. And you can be like, you know what? These are trains. They are powered by, if they're effectively tensored floating disk, with levitate and haste. And go.
So like 30 wizards did it.
Well, the creation rules, after they errated them and added some new shit, yeah, you can do that.
Mm.
You can make a far future city that's all built out of magic for dirt cheap.
So we're in fairy tale.
Basically.
Love that anime. Never finished it.
I'm actually getting on that point now. But yeah, it's interesting. It's like, it's fun to watch the interactions between magic and tech in the bizarro ways. Like,
I actually like games like I like my movies. With some limitations to them.
True.
If, like, I don't know, Captain Marvel, you know, she's, Superman in the Marvel Universe, no limitations, and Stark can do anything he puts his mind to as long as they give him 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm role-playing, you know, characters can't do that. To be the hero has to have challenges. And if I'm playing a game where there is no challenges, like if I'm playing a sorcerer and I've made it to level 3 in Pathfinder, and start Tony Starking that shit and start Batmaning around, like, oh, we got a problem in the dungeon? Fuck it, I'll just tack nuke that motherfucker and we'll rake in all the XP and call it a day.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one, for good inspiration on limitations, I mean, trying to come up with weaknesses has been a big one for me. Like, I've tried the whole get my players have characters with, you know, actual background and where they're from and stuff. I can try and pull at them later. But then we haven't played enough for me to get to that with the players I want to do that with.
I still like that look on Narcissus's face when I was playing Suteka. And I had a gauntlet that shooted... That shooted?
Yeah, how, shooted it.
How I shot Webb. It would shoot out 4 magic missiles.
Okay.
Right? That's it. It was basically a gauntlet. And I was pulling the kind of crap that you would expect to see out of Stargate with that kind of stuff. So I was doing the, you know...
Very Asgardian.
No, very Egyptian mythos-based.
Yeah.
And, of course, with a name like Suteka, that's kind of obvious. And Narcissus looks over, and I was just firing magic missiles like crazy, dude. Just every turn, I'm peppering the bad guys for automatic damage, automatic hit. And he's like, how many of those do you have? And I'm like, unlimited. And he's like, how? And I was like, I just balanced the rules in my favor.
See, if we go over here and put this here, and three of these here, it balances out.
Yeah, about, well, I have to take some detriments to it that only I could use it.
Oh, no.
And, you know, that gave me a bit of a discount, and the only halflings could use it. Hey, I happen to be a halfling, so that gave me a bit more of a discount. And only sorcerers could use it, and I happen to be a sorcerer, so hey, more of a discount. So I took detriments that were in my benefit.
Let me guess, you also took the detriment of only whatever gender your character could use it?
No, I only took the detriments that were listed.
Damn.
Only specific class, race, or spellcasting type could use it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's the kind of shit that I would pull with a sorcerer or a wizard is, when people ask me, you know, how can you do that? I'm like, it's me, dude. That's my only explanation at this point. It's like, it's me. I took the time to sit down, look through the books, comb through the forums, read the erratas. It's me. I've got this shit nailed. You want a attack nuke? I can roll one out in a week.
Yeah. What was it? You wanted to create a wand that basically flamethrower apostrophe D beat.
Oh, yeah, the bee cannon? Yeah, that
did end up happening, by the way.
The bee cannon, I never got to make it, but it's just Summon Nature's Ally.
Really?
Yeah. You use Summon Nature's Ally as a druid, and you play a Swarm Caller as your archetype. So anytime you do a Summon Nature's Ally, it automatically summons swarms, and you can just manufacture bee cannons. Because it alters the spell to summon swarms instead of just normal animals. So you just summon swarms of bees and then put the casting on it as continuous. So you get an endless stream of bees in people's faces. Bees! Bees for everybody.
Should do an endless swarm of tarantula hawks. That'd be fun.
I don't know. I always think an endless swarm of Goliath spiders would be fun.
No. African bird catchers. Yeah.
Now, if you want to be really, really fucking rude about it, is you play, I think it's a Diabolist. There's one of them in there that deals specifically in diseases. Mm-hmm. One of the cleric types. And then you just go for advanced diseases and start, you know, make a cannon that shoots Ebola at people. Ebola for everybody.
Swine.
And of course, you know, you have to play a cute anime girl in a nice jacket with strange little pigtails.
Ebola-chan.
I love you, Ebola-chan.
Inspiration is what you make it. That's the TLDR of this. Inspiration is what you make it.
Yeah, the TLDR is inspiration, what you make of it. Most of my inspiration actually comes from the limitations imposed on me by the system. If, you know, I look at the rules, you know, they give me a rule set. And if I'm not playing a storytelling character, I'm not playing a character, I'm playing a rule set. I look at the rules and go, how do I make this awesome? How do I ramp it up to 11? Fuck the dial. Turn it to 12.
That's when you make the rules, you're submissive.
I chain the rules to my radiator, like I said. Give it warm orange juice once a week.
So,
it puts the Mountain Dew in the basket or it gets the hose again.
I'm sorry. Wow. We're going to dark places on this podcast.
Well, inspiration, I mean, and when it comes to characters, I know a lot of people who just straight up pull names and they'll just fully try and create a character after something they saw on TV or a book they read once, and I'm cool with that, I'm down with that, I do that half the time. Most of the time I just steal names because I'm not that creative with names, or they sound retarded, so I can say that.
Name generators are your friend.
No, I hate name generators, man.
A lot of us do pull, especially early on, like, say, the first 5 to 10 years of gaming, almost everybody's going to do it.
Yeah.
It's a given. Almost everybody is going to pull a name from a popular TV show and try to rebuild that character and play it. I mean, look at all the Drizzt clones out there.
Yeah.
Oh, talk about originality completely in lacking.
I think the most original name I ever came up with was for the country we founded in Kingmaker, which, by the way... You two will auto-enjoy this. I told the Goblin earlier. They're doing a 10th anniversary edition of Kingmaker. Hardcover with the supplements and a bestiary just for it.
You guys want to try it a second time?
I'm feeling my enthusiasm wilt.
I don't know. I can only get so hard, Brett.
My dick is shriveling up like a stack of Russian dimes.
Really? I figured it'd be more like the Venezuelan currency.
No, that's inflation. I'm going through deflation right now. Fucking Kingmaker. That fucking module was so bored.
Oh, dude. That thing was so bad. You couldn't throw a rock without hitting a named character you didn't find out until book two.
Well, the concept was great. The concept was fucking awesome. That's why I picked it. It was just the execution of said concept.
Well, since they eroded it for multiple formats, apparently, because it's a Pathfinder mod, but apparently it's supposed to be compatible with 5e.
Oh, fuck 5e. Fuck 5e in the fucking neck.
Well, Pathfinder 2 is basically 5e clone.
Yeah, but 5e is, well... It's I don't even really... I'm not that fluent with the rules yet. Okay, I personally don't have very much interest in it, and I already know how to break it. I already know how to break a game I have almost no encounters with.
How about you give us an example?
Rogues. Play a rogue.
Elaborate.
Backstab is your best buddy. Sneak, stabby, stabby, you win.
No discernible anatomy.
You get so many fucking dice, dude. You want to play a fucking glass tank and kill anything in like one, maybe two hits, play a rogue. Rogue is broken right out of the fucking book. It's almost as bad as druid. And, you know, fuck it. Well, druids are, oh my god. I used to, like, rain on them so hard, and, like, whenever I see somebody playing a druid now, like, and typically it's, like, a girl, her first time, or some dude who, you know, just wants to play, you know,
hippy-dippy
evil nature guy, and they're playing a druid, and I'm just sitting there, like, shaking my head.
I know I've brought this up before in a previous podcast, but you look at historic druids, they weren't hippies. They were kind of hardcore. They were kind of brutal.
Nature doesn't forgive.
Dude, they were hardcore for parkour.
Hardcore. No, it's just fucking druids. But as far as inspiration goes, it really depends. And a lot of players are like this. Like I mentioned earlier, if I'm playing a storyline character, if I'm playing a character who's got a name and a history and a background and family and contacts and a job and they go off adventuring, I'm playing a character, not the rules. But if somebody says, oh, sit down, roll up a character, and we're just going to play a game, and it's just basically a module, at that point I'm just playing math.
Yeah.
And my only inspiration at that point is how to turn the math into my favor.
Yeah, I mean, they did put out a deal a while back, and they're revising it now, is a actual Game of Thrones RP.
Again?
They're apparently doing a revised hardcover edition of it or something. I don't know, it was all in the news, but it's all because Game of Thrones, the big battle we thought would decide the world, actually is like a mid-season semi-finale.
That episode has so many people pissed off right now, and if we go back to old-school Game of Thrones, like, before season 5, when R.R. Martin was still more involved in it. That is a great piece of cinema and literature to work off of when building world inspiration. Because, I mean, it's a very political kind of game. If it was a game, it'd be very political, and the combat would be just, do you really want to fucking do it? Because there's no clerics. No clerics in the world really change the whole dynamic, because battle becomes deadly. It becomes serious. So if you want to fuck a motherfucker up,
you can do it.
You can do it, but chances are you might lose a hand. Or you might lose a hand called Ned Stark.
You might lose a nose, Tyrion.
You might lose a nose. As far as games go, I mean, it's one of those ones that would be more for an older audience who are more inclined to be thinking about what their character does more than actually doing. Because D&D is just like, let's run to a dungeon and get some XP. And if Game of Thrones, a role-playing game, was run kind of like the books or the movies, you'd be like, let's wait to go to Harrenhal. We need more soldiers.
Yeah, there's no need to rush in and try and poison this one person when they have an army that outnumbers us 1,000 to 1.
I mean, at that point, poisoning might be your best and only option.
Yeah, but when you got to try and get through everything, that's when you play the, no, we're totally good, buddy.
You know, just because we are talking about Game of Thrones right here and inspiration, I'm not sure if you guys have made this point already, so forgive you if you have.
Go for it.
But history books, you know, just look at the history books. I mean, Game of Thrones, unless I'm grievously mistaken, was actually based off of the
the War of Roses, which was which was the conflict that ended the Middle Ages in England between the Tudors and the Plantagenets, and where everyone was trying to fight for the English throne.
Yeah, the Lannister family was based loosely off the Lancasters.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of historical references in there.
Yeah, I mean, old English history, I mean, there's lots of good stuff there. It's a lot of people just telling each other to fuck off, this is my island.
Well, one of the ones that I pulled for inspiration, especially early on, and you guys have seen some of that in the last world that I ran, is a lot of Roman-style
history. It definitely had a little bit of that Roman kind of feel.
Yeah, the Roman history, it's one of the things I used to be really big into when I was younger. Back in high school, that's pretty much all I studied on the side for when it came to history. And the world that I built had a bit of Rome into it. It had a bit of Far East Asia. Had a touch of Nordic Vikings in there. When you guys went across the sea, there was a bit of kind of Mesoamerican but westernized. So I colonialized it.
Oh, no.
I mean, I definitely saw that, and I gotta say, for my world, it's a lot of... I kind of want to say I'm pulling a bit from Avatar The Last Airbender, in the fact of it's usually a big capital of an old country, and, you know, there's stuff happening, you are charged to do stuff, you're supposed to go adventure because, well, you're basically
hired
to do so. But yeah, I mean, that's one of my big things. I've been trying to branch out a bit more, expand my reading. A lot of those old D&D style stories, I'm almost done with Dragons of Winter Night, and oh my god, this one's been a drag. There was a good spot in the middle, and then it just started slowing down towards the ass end of the book. But that's given me so much more inspiration for this one-off bullshit campaign I'm going to run. But I mean, definitely literature and history and movies and TV shows work really well, but... I mean, what are some things we could recommend to our listeners?
If we're going on history, I would recommend going back on Mesoamerican real quick, because it's not really touched on very much in most role-playing games. I would go back on Mesoamerican and make the player characters... The whole storyline is the player characters are part of the indigenous people, and the shiny pale gods have just shown up, but they're not exactly being very godly. So that would be a very interesting kind of game to play, because it's not highly westernized, but it's kind of like two clashing cultures, and one of them is technologically advanced, and you happen to be on the losing side right from the get-go.
That would definitely be interesting, because a lot of the games you get into, it's like all of a sudden, oh, you guys are at the ass end of this war, it totally looks like you guys are doomed, you get to save the day. That's what I've seen several times, and one of those where it's like, no, this is when night's starting to fall, the sun is setting. That would be cooler.
That would be a lot cooler, you know, especially if you're pulling two divergent cultures that have absolutely no similarities, and you happen to be on the losing side right from the very beginning. You know, how far would the character go? And especially if you did, like, a prequel game to that, you know, that lasted, like, say, 2 months, 8 game sessions, where you build up before the arrival of the newcomers, where you're just doing shit and building contacts. You're getting to know the NPCs, you're getting to know the landscape, you know, the culture and everything, so your character already has a vested interest from the time that the primary campaign kicks off.
Real quick, hold on, you said 8 game sessions, do you mean 2 years?
Okay, I'm used to gaming on a different schedule where it's almost weekly.
Yeah, I wish I could do that. Like, my schedule's gotten pretty stable, but I don't know how people put up with floating schedules, man. I hate it.
It's part of adulting, and the weird part is, the older you get, the weirder the schedule gets until you retire.
And then it's all free.
Yeah, then it's all free.
Yeah, but then half the people you want to game with are dead.
I know. It's like, shit, you know, somebody has a kid and the schedule gets bored. So yeah, 8 game sessions, 2 months, that's the schedule I'm used to, but with the schedule you're working with right now, yeah, about 2 years.
Yeah. Twice a month, guys, we can totally do that.
Twice a month isn't that bad. Twice a month is not that bad, especially if you're doing long-term game sessions, which are like 6 to 8 hours each.
Is it, we're averaging, what, 12 now there, Moniker?
Yeah.
Roughly? And it's to the point where literally we're like, oh, I totally want to finish it, but I'm going to fall asleep driving.
Yeah.
And we're doing it at my house.
Yeah. Yeah, so for inspiration, I would look more towards history than I would fiction or fantasy. Because fiction or fantasy, when, like, the big bomb drops in-game, you're either going to get players who are like, whoa, that's so fucking cool. Or there's more of a 75% chance that they'll just roll their eyes and be like, really? It's kind of like when how a GM looks at a player who makes a character that's based off of a really well-known character.
I'm making Hercules.
What if I made a D&D character, you know, whose name was Jim Snow? Exactly. Yeah, you guys would groan. Any GM worth his salt would groan at me for making Jim Snow with my sword Wolfclaw or whatever. And I fight undead as my main...
Favorite enemy.
Favorite enemy, yeah.
Wait, is he a ranger?
Oh, he'd have to be to get the...
Well, no, because my character died, but he came back in his history, his storyline stuff, so he's a D-Ranger.
But he has all this power, so is he a Power Ranger?
Well, he's also Snow, so he's a White Power Ranger. Run away! We're getting the bad joke time here. But the same thing goes. I mean, like, if a player makes a character who's an obvious ripoff, most of the other players are going to roll their eyes. The GM is going to roll their eyes. And if you flip it inverse, and the GM basically recreates Westeros, and it's too fucking obvious. So when the big bomb drops, if there's, like, I don't know, an undead invasion by the Shadow Lord, instead of Night King, you just change the name to Shadow Lord, which is close enough, whatever. The players are not going to be very responsive to it.
You're probably already going to know what's going to happen anyway. I mean, if you are going to be that blatant, it's not really a mystery how events are probably going to unfold.
Well, it's like one GM, he pulled, it was basically Ring Gates out of Stargate into the D&D world. And once we heard, you know, him making all the sound effects, like half the players were like, that's the big reveal, interest gone.
Yeah, definitely when you hit that point where it's like, oh, really?
Really?
I mean, I try to avoid that. That's why I'm going on this crazy bullshit, which I'm kind of pulling from a sort of Men in Black, you know, X-Files kind of deal where you have to deal with the crazy shit because you're a federal agent and you're supposed to protect everybody.
I am an FBI agent!
You know, kind of think about it, it's more like Sanctuary. But everyone knows about all the shit. It's weird. But yeah, I mean, that's where I try to draw from, just because then I can pull shit out of my ass. But, yeah, one of the historical things that really I'm trying to morph into it is a bit more of like the, what are they? Not Mesopotamians.
Sumerian?
Yeah, Sumerian. I've been picking up a lot of Sumerian stuff lately. And some of the political battles they had, even Sargon of Akkad, not the YouTuber, the actual historical figure, like his life, we could totally do a campaign based around that where we're side figures and he's the big guy rolling around and he's never, you know, in game unless he's doing a speech or something. But just the passage of his life could totally make a great campaign for everybody else.
Yeah, I think it's always, I always appreciate when someone can make a fantasy setting or a character that isn't based off of some Western civilization and kind of utilize not as, I don't want to say popular because that doesn't feel like the right word.
Mainstream.
Yeah, I guess. Not as mainstream, you know. I said my trigger word. But not as mainstream.
The triggering. Ugh, Colonel, the moniker's been triggered.
You have a countdown of 5 before the bomb goes off.
Crab battle.
But anything like... anything from the Americas pre-Columbian expansion or really old Mesopotamia or even some of the political... or not political, but some of the old African kingdoms like Great Zimbabwe or anything from like the Berbers...
As long as we stay the hell away from the Moors, they did enough to my people.
Yeah.
No, if you're doing a game based off of their history and the players were part of them, it would be a, like, what do they call it? The all evil campaign where you just run around, pillage, loot, and rape all you want?
Oh, yeah, I thought we were trying to stick away from Northern European culture.
No, no, we're talking about the Moors here.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that would actually be a fun campaign. Be like, yeah, we're totally an established nation. We're just...
It would come down to the player character seeing who could pile the head piles of heads higher than their horse first.
Oh, wait. You talking Mongolians?
Skull.
No, no, that was the Moors. Events.
That's all I gotta say is skull throwing events.
Okay, that's my ancestors, the Aztecs.
I still wanted that whistle. You know, that would be a great way to start a game with a death whistle.
Okay, I've been thinking about it. I want to make a bard where that is his musical instrument. And I want to get it masterworked and enchanted to give all the negative debuffs it can to my opponents.
For me, it's I want to play a goblin bard with crash cymbals.
You know, I always thought it'd be funny to get like a bunch of wizards or sorcerers, stand them all in a line at like some great battle in whatever campaign, and they all start firing magic missile in unison, and the sound effect you play in the background is, you guys know what a naval burfer is from World War II?
Oh god.
Or Stalin's organ. Those missile trucks that just make that noise whenever it fires off.
You know, fun thing about history real quick, and I know I've brought it up before, but I think it was season one, is the Romans did something really fucked up. So they had a...
Well, that narrows it down.
They had slings, right? It's a standard D&D weapon, real easy to use, lightest range weapon you got. And they would just carve a little hole on one side of the sling bolt, the little rock or whatever. And it made this horrible whistling sound. I always wondered, what would it be like to, like, fire a bunch of those out of a shotgun?
Pretty funny. Probably fuck up your shotgun, but it'd be funny.
Not if you used a blunderbuss. Blunderbusses are meant to just throw trash downrange.
Well, no, but if you've got a gun that you have the proper wadding and all that, the wadding doesn't come off right away. You know, I've been also watching how to build a bunch of different ammunition styles. It's interesting work. But,
he's a prepper, my friends. He's a prepper.
Not really, just bored.
He's prepping for boredom.
Exactly. But, like, these crazy weapons where it's like, dude, I've totally got a sword that whenever I swing it, it just whistles. High-pitched whistle. You know, shit like that. Little things that you can pull from actual real-world history.
That reminds me of another story that I'll tell after the podcast about swords making noises.
Oh, yes, I love this one.
What, the sword that screams louder the faster you swing it?
No, I was playing an undead who'd never slept, so he spent his spare time pranking all the living.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the swords had alarm cast on it, and the alarm was the sound of a baby crying.
Great big intimidation roll.
I can go into detail on it, but the video's on YouTube, so if anybody's listening and actually cares about that story, they can just go on to our YouTube site and, you know, hear the story in its full entirety there.
Oh, it's glorious. It's great. I actually prefer the part with the goat.
Oh, yeah, when I decorated the camp with a dead goat.
Yeah. It was like dead Christmas.
Well, this is what happens when you have an undead with a sense of humor.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the things that when people play undead, they're always moody and brooding. Them. Again, inspiration. You know, when we play an undead character, we take our inspiration from television and movies and music and literature and all that stuff, and the undead are always seen as brooding, dark, mysterious figures who are the crow. They're weighed down with ennui and shit like that. And I was like, let's just flip this on the side. You know, play an undead who's just, he's been awake for so long, it's starting to go make him a little nutty. So he starts playing pranks on people and, you know, just doing what he can with his undead time to actually make it enjoyable
or productive.
Was his motto, there's 24 usable hours in a day?
Pretty much.
I like it.
If there was a joke to play on somebody, he would fucking do it. Because, I mean, what's he going to do? Die again? Whoopty shit. At least he'll have a good lap on the way out. So yeah, there was everything in that campaign. And again, it was inspiration. And the inspiration was I took the standard trope of undead character, flipped it on its side, and just decided, hey, I'm going to play a undead with a sense of humor. Because you don't see that very often.
Not especially. And it's all the stories that we've heard about this character, and any time that you've brought him up in campaign, he's just fucking hoot.
He is a hoot. He was a hoot on the outside of the game. Inside the game, the other players hated him.
Well, that's what happens when your victims are your party mates.
Well, yeah, like, we had a deranged sorcerer. I don't talk about him much because he was really fucking nutty. But he was, like, chaotic, evil, always giggling, and he loved fire a lot.
Fire!
Exactly. He got fucked up in a fight, hardcore. And, of course, I'm the undead, and I'm the only one with a heal skill. So they send me over to go make sure that he, you know, survives his wounds post battle. And I realize we're in like a ranger cleric combo. And so my nature check tells me that there are hallucinogenic mushrooms growing nearby. So while our sorcerer is passed out, I make him a hat. And so when he finally comes to with enough hit points to move around on his own, he's also tripping balls. Which is not a good combo, man. A chaotic evil sorcerer who loves fire magic, who's currently thinking there's sharks in the walls.
You know, that's another fun thing is everyone usually be like, oh, I'm a sorcerer. Oh, I'm a cleric of this. It's always fire. Always fire.
Not always, no.
Yeah, fire is pretty.
Fire is pretty, yes, indeed. I typically don't do that. Like, I've never really played much in the way of fire sorcerers or fire wizards.
I totally want to do the opposite. I want to be, like, a water sorcerer.
I think my favorite was a acid wizard.
Did he wear tie-dye?
So Jim Morrison?
No, it was acid, like legitimately hydrochloric acid.
Okay.
Oh, so he's from one of those countries we don't talk about.
She.
Sorry.
Well, the whole thing was based off a theme of aberrations. So fire didn't make much sense. But acid, skin melting and shit, did. So I went with acid, and I even went out and I bought green dice that looked like they were dipped in acid.
We hate those dice.
No, you guys hate my pink dice.
The ones that disappeared?
I got more, and they roll really well, too.
Lovely.
God help us all. We should totally go play a game over at Narcissus so you can lose those again.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm thinking after all this point in time, somebody may have pinched my dice, because they don't just vanish, especially when they're that hot.
I mean, and no, we're not just talking about the color. They are, like, fucking pink.
The first time I played with those dice, I rolled 6 20s in a 3-hour game session.
Damn!
Yeah, I was averaging a 20 every 30 minutes.
Those dice liked you.
They loved me, dude. Like, I think I rolled a nat 1 twice on them the entire time I owned them.
Jesus.
But
that's good.
And it was almost, you know, almost every game session, it was guaranteed I was going to roll at least 2 20s.
And if you're lucky, they'll be at the very important moments.
They usually were. Those dice were just...
Fate huggers.
They were fucking molten hot. They were a glob of magma with 20 on it. They're smoldering hot.
You ever have a GM pick them up and say, I gotta see these, see if they're weighted?
No, I did not. No, I never had a GM do that.
Huh.
But, no, I didn't weight those dice. I didn't cheat with them, nothing.
All natural.
They were all right out of the box. That's the way they were rolling.
Damn.
I did not... I never have. I know how to rig dice.
That's going to be for another episode.
I think I might actually know that our studio time is kind of cleared up and summer's coming. I might actually make a video on how to cheat with dice. Because, you know, you got spin down dice, which obvious as shit. You have your standard D20s. Not so obvious, but there's the different techniques, and some of those techniques easy to get caught, and some of those not too reliable, but hard as fuck to get caught.
Now, can you do a reverse rogue roll?
Reverse rogue roll?
So, it seems like every show, animated or otherwise, has an obligatory D&D episode. That's from Paradise PD on Netflix. We're not sponsored by them. It's just hilarious. It's a terrible show. But
we're not sponsored by these terrible people. Fuck those guys, but watch their show anyway.
No, terrible in the point of some of the jokes. Oh my god, they're either really bad or they're so like good and niche. But no, in that they have their obligatory D&D episode, and it turns out the dad, who's like the chief of police and all this stuff, has this rolling dice technique to roll a 20 like 90% of the time. It's ridiculous.
there is no technique to roll a 20, 90% of the time that I know of. I think they were just hyperbolating that.
I know, that's why I threw it out there, because it's so ridiculous. There's it no way to cheat it with a roll. It's not like a coin where you can put face and then...
With a spin down, there is.
Really?
There's techniques to use a spin down where you can get a 20 almost every time.
It's also why a lot of DMs will very, very strongly be like, no, I really don't think you should use that dice.
Yeah, a lot of GMs don't allow spin downs because there are ways to roll them that will increase your odds of getting high numbers.
Yeah, because aren't they weighted?
No, they're not weighted.
Because it's in a sequence. All the high numbers are all on the same side of the dice.
Yeah. So when you, if you spin underhanded like you normally do, you have absolutely no control. But if you throw side-handed and... There's a technique to it, but if you throw side-handed, you can basically make the die spin across the table and just land on a high number.
See, I'm more of an over-palm kind of guy. You know?
Me, I'm like, I want to put them in a Yahtzee cup, shake them up real well, and then just drop them on the table and call it good.
So you want to buy one of those $95 wood and leather cups that have like a dragon insignia on them?
I wouldn't mind.
We'll get you one with a wolf.
And I will make Mexico great again. Just for you.
Gonna make it rain pesos.
I'm gonna call La Migra on your ass.
Hey, I'm undercover. I'm light-skinned. My dad's the one that has the problem.
Ice, baby, I'll break your family apart.
Oh, shit.
All right.
You're the undercover Mexican. Hello.
Dude, you look like a Swede, like a short, stocky Swede.
I appreciate that.
I was thinking more like Austrian crossed with Brit.
No, the Brit have redeeming qualities.
Like what?
Brexit.
If they ever get around to it.
Vote UKIP.
All right.
Oh, we can't vote UKIP. We're in America.
And we are off topic.
We are off topic. You know why? Because we passed an hour.
So we have.
Yeah.
So
now we're digressing and shit because we passed an hour. So we might as well wrap it up.
All right.
Closing thoughts. Let's go around the table.
Inspiration can come from anywhere. TV, movies, video games, looking at an idea and going, huh, I want to change that slightly.
Yeah, listening to the Beatles' White Album, you know, specifically Helter Skelter. I mean, it can inspire you.
This coming from the fat Charlie Manson-looking motherfucker. Helter Skelter. Race war now. Look at you over there.
Oh, boy. You know, I think it'd be fun to play a Paladin of the Elements. I gotta find a way to make that happen.
That's actually doable, and that's really, really awesome.
Right? But it doesn't have to be limited to just what you're doing and how you're doing it. You can be like, I want to be a sorcerer with all my spells having animal themes. So, like, my fireball looks like a little firefox just trailing down the road until it hits something.
Wait, so you're saying that all you do is cast Patronus?
No, it uses Firefox, not Chrome.
Better than Explorer.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely say the short and long of it is... Don't worry about trying to be super original, but also, the other side of that sword, do not be blatant. You know, you want to do a Jon Snow ripoff, at least make it interesting, you know.
No, dude.
You want to do, you know, Genghis Khan the Conqueror, make it funny. Like, just try something a little off the wall. Tweak it, adjust it, change color scheme a little. But whatever you do, do not Grand Theft Auto that where it's the same thing with just different color scheme. Don't play yourself. Don't play the same thing over and over again where you're just like, oh, my character died. I'm going to play a paladin again. Oh, character died. I'm going to play a paladin again. And just the same thing over and over. Change it up. Change it a little. Change it a lot. Don't worry about being called unoriginal.
And then there's the endless stream of bards.
Oh, come on. I've always wanted to play one character and one character only, which is a Sohai warrior monk, like Japanese style, a demon queller named Helen Keller.
God damn.
She does not fear the night, for she cannot see evil. She does not speak foul words of evil and temptation, because there we go, Demon Slayer! I buy you up!
And on that note, this is Blasphemous signing off. Hail to the dark side.
Moniker, signing off.
Farewell from the Lord Dragon.
I'm gonna go wash my eyes with bleach now. Game Goblin out.
Conspiracy theory. Yeah.